Open the House Committee on Agriculture and Natural Resources. Good morning, it's Thursday, February 22nd. I'm going to go ahead and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 1533A. Ask Representative Stark to join us. Our Senate President for his fair council bill might show up, but since he snoozed, he lost, and you can go first.
Good morning, my name is Dwayne Stark, State Representative, House District 4 in Southern Oregon. Pleasure to be here, and thank you for letting me jump in here, Chair Clem. So we're here to talk about Senate Bill 1533, and which is really a clarification in land use exemption laws. We've discovered through that some counties were interpreting the law a little bit differently. And what it does is they discovered a number of years back, we as a legislature said, hey, we approve of, and now equine therapy. I was thinking hippotherapy, which is a type of equine therapy. And we said these are good things. You can get insurance reimbursement for those. And we've also allowed an exceptions process to allow equine therapy to exist on exclusive farm use land. It's a good thing. People are supportive of that. We discovered that there was a was that the Senate President?
No, your partner in crime on this bill.
Oh, excellent. Well, we'll let him take it over in just a moment. But we discovered that there are different counties. Some of them were interpreting the law as to say that if the person receiving therapy or treatment was not physically touching the horse, then it was no longer an allowed use on that land, mm-hmm. meaning that you might be doing, equine therapy, riding a horse, and maybe you need to counsel or process with this child when they get off of the horse, but if they're not physically touching the horse, then you can't continue forward with the counseling and so forth. Likewise, with hippotherapy, and you'll hear from some people who practice this and so forth, that, you know, there are movements where you do on and with the horse, and then there are movements that you do away from the horse. We want to make sure that our land use exceptions laws are very clear, that when you're not physically touching the horse, that you're allowed to still continue with your treatment and therapy there. It seems fairly straightforward. Thousand Friends, Farm Bureau, and LCDC got together, or DLCD got together to make sure that all the wording was good on this, and are all here to support it as well. I'll hand it over to Senator Canope.
Say amen.
Senator,
and how are
welcome.
State Senator Tim Canope, Senate District 27. Representative Stark asked me to come down and hold his coat while he testified, so I apologize for being late. We are partnering on this bill, obviously a very important bill. There's about 20 of these equine therapy facilities around the state, essentially most all nonprofit, and they do great work. And so it was really important for us, hearing from some constituents, to react to that before there was a serious problem that jeopardized their ability to operate. And they have done such good work for so many people that we wanted to make sure that we didn't get in a situation where there was some big blow up or some big case, and then the legislature has to act. So we wanted to come in and try to fix the issue before that happened. And I thought, what better bill for a short session than a small technical fix? And so that's what this session was for. And so we brought this forward. I had a very good vote, coming out of the Senate. And we hope that you find favorability with this particular bill. And thank you for your time and attention this morning, Mr. Chair and committee.
Okay, questions for our colleagues?
Thank you.
Wow, off easy.
Yeah.
Okay. And I saw Courtney's staff person. Is he maybe?
She's going
to read his testimony. Okay, we'll just wait then. So let's have Jonathan Sandow, Jeff begins with a C, and Tony Bordadora.
These two are together, if that's right.
Okay.
Chairman,
oh, so Jonathan, you're going to hold off. Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So you must be Jeff with a C.
I am
something.
Jeff with a C.
What is that?
Campbell.
Campbell.
Like the C.
Mine's worse. My handwriting's even worse. So, okay. Welcome, Jeff.
Thank you, Chairman Clem, members of the committee. I appreciate your time and this opportunity. My name is Jeff Campbell. Here from Bend, Oregon, representing Healing Rains Therapeutic Writing Center. I ask your indulgence because I am not a professional lobbyist. I do not do this for a living.
We prefer non-professional. don't worry.
I'm a simple map maker who just happens to be married to an incredible woman that a couple of decades ago decided she had a real passion for doing something with horses to help other people. And so we started Healing Rains Therapeutic Riding Center, have been helping folks heal with horses, which is their tagline, for 20 years. We've discovered over that 20 years that there are a couple of different, there are a multitude of different ways to help people heal with horses. Two real distinct categories, and this is why we're here today. There is the traditional therapeutic riding that is much akin to if you go to pretty much any horse barn, take riding lessons from an instructor and so on. It's obviously a little more sophisticated than that because we're dealing with kids and adults with special needs. But that category of therapeutic riding is covered well with outright use and as well as some permitted use under existing EFU code. There is a portion of these activities, however, and Representative Stark referred to them, under the general umbrella of hippotherapy, that does not include using a horse or being in consistent interaction with a horse the entire time you're in therapy. The classic example is with physical therapy. You have a licensed physical therapist that is trained in using a horse much the same way that they would use a medicine ball in a traditional sense. They use the horse to help, the movement of the horse to help increase core strength, balance, muscular development, so on. A typical session would have a half hour or so on the horse with the client working through different routines, and then a half hour or so in an adjacent room, adjacent facility to follow up on what they just did, stretching, strengthening core, all those sorts of things. When I described these activities to a senior land use planner in Deschutes County, great guy, he immediately said, no, you can't do that. As soon as you step away from the horse and you start doing other things, even if it's related to what you just accomplished on the horse, that is not a permitted use under EFU code. That there has been some debate on that, but it just speaks to the ambiguity there. So what we're trying to do with this particular bill is to just remove that ambiguity. There are a number of our centers, we have almost 20 across the state that are operating on EFU land, most of which do some form of these activities, and we just don't want the rug pulled out from under them, just get blindsided by a county government, some other circumstances that may impact their ability to do these services. So we have worked very closely with Thousand Friends of Oregon, with Oregon Farm Bureau, with DLCD, Land Conservation and Development, to craft this bill that we believe accomplishes that, removes that ambiguity. So there was a lot of bipartisan support across different perspectives of land use in Oregon. So we feel like we have a really strong bill and certainly would solicit all of your support.
Great. Tony?
Chairman Clem and members of the committee, I'm Tony Bordadora. I'm an occupational therapist at HART, which stands for Horses Adaptive Riding and Therapy. We're an independent and we're a nonprofit. Now, we're providing a really unique therapeutic environment out at HART. Instead of people coming to a hospital or an outpatient setting, they're coming to a barn with horses, a miniature horse, a cat, and we have a therapy room. So this is really important for patients that have difficulty tolerating a hospital environment or an environment with big waiting rooms and lots of people. It's a really different, special, outdoor relaxing environment for these people. We have 80 clients, 15 of them participate in hippotherapy. We're in a rural location also. We're in Independence, but we're really close to a lot of small towns like Dallas, Fall City, Monmouth, and we're only 10 minutes from Salem. So it's also a nice rural location for all those little, people that live in those towns to get to us. So with hippotherapy, like Jeff mentioned, we do, it's an hour session once a week, but we do 30 minutes on the horse and 30 minutes off of the horse. And it's really important for us to be able to pair those. It really helps us meet our goals. So I have a couple of examples. We see a lot of kiddos with autism or attention deficit disorder, and it's really helpful for them to ride the horse and get that calming, rhythmic, repetitive movement of the horse, so it improves their attention. And then we do the 30 minutes immediately off the horse in the therapy room, where we can work on handwriting skills, buttoning, using scissors, where otherwise they would have a lot of difficulty attending to those activities. But after the movement of the horse, it just flows so much better for them. I also see a Navy veteran that had a stroke about a year ago. And for him, it's really important to do therapy activities before he gets on the horse, because he has a lot of tight muscles. We need to do a lot of muscle relaxation activities to prepare his body for the movement of the horse. And then he can benefit from that movement a lot more. When he started at HART a few months ago, he was using a walker and his foot dragged when he walked. Now, with all of this therapy, he's able to use a four-point cane and his foot is no longer dragging. He's so excited about the therapy. You know, he's done a lot of therapy before he got to HART, but he said that none of those therapies have worked like the movement of the horse does. So I feel it's really important to be able to do both on the horse and off the horse, so these patients can really benefit the most from the therapy and make these gains for their goals. Thank you.
Okay, Sharon.
Thank you, Chairman Clem and representatives. My name is Sharon Stapleton. I've been asked to come today and speak. I'm a client, and so I have been involved in hippotherapy now for 12 years. In 2004, I was rear-ended in a car accident. I was at a stoplight, and someone rear-ended me. Forgive me if I'm not as eloquent as my friends here. I sustained a pretty severe brain injury and was required brain surgery. They could not repair the brain injury, so they put Teflon pads in my brain, and now I am dizzy all the time. So I started searching for different therapies. I'm very unique. I come from a very unique perspective, because I was also, before my car accident, a pediatric critical care nurse and flight nurse at Dornbecker Children's Hospital. So I've worked with children with special needs for my entire career. I saw them as in their critical element and saved lives. But then I never really realized until this happened to me, and I'm blessed to be able to see this perspective of now. I can see the rehab aspect of it that I never really saw before. So I started seeking out a way to do therapy. I knew that was probably going to be lifelong now, especially with my dizziness. I want to not fall. So often I was falling into walls regularly and always touching walls, and a woman came up to me at a grocery store and told me that I really should stop drinking so much. So it was pretty bad, and now when most people see me, they do not realize that I have difficulties with my balance. I'm able to walk pretty well, and I attribute this greatly to hippotherapy. I've done hippotherapy now at two facilities for over the past 12 years. Because I have this perspective of seeing children in different aspects, seeing them in the critical environment and then the rehab environment, I understand now how hard rehab really is. And with children in particular, it's so difficult to get a child to do something, exercises. You can give them a list in their family, a list of exercises to do. Well, good luck getting them to do it, because they generally won't. It's not fun. But in the horse environment, the equine environment, you can get these children to actually do something that's repetitive and strengthening to their body and get them to do something that they would not do in a regular environment. And they don't know that they're doing therapy. They just know that they're doing something fun. And I have seen kids over the past 12 years that have, that come in wheelchairs that are like this off to the side. And on a horse, you can't sit like this. So they develop core strength over time. And I've seen children that are like this when they first start, and adults too, that then are sitting more upright with better core strength and able to have a better quality of life and less difficulty with pain and issues that go along with that. Just multiple experiences with children. For me, I don't tolerate a lot of noise, and horses and the equine facility is a quiet place. Horses are quiet. Horses communicate nonverbally. Many of our autistic children in particular communicate nonverbally, and therefore they do really well with the horses. And they develop a language between them that even we adults just can't see sometimes. It's really fascinating to watch. And because it's a quiet environment, some children can come in that get overstimulated really easily, come in and actually calm down fairly quickly when they're around the horse and on the horse. For me, I required off-horse time before I had my on-horse time. Because of my dizziness and my nausea that went along with it, I had to do quite a bit of therapy at the barn off-horse, and that was in the office, and helping with chores, you know, mucking stalls and putting water in buckets and things like that. And over time, I've now developed into being able to be a three-day-a-week volunteer at the facility.
So I'm so sorry. We just got a bunch of other things. So can you complete, and I'll have the next guest. Yeah.
Yeah.
Any questions for this panel?
Let me just make a brief comment,
Representative
Chair Clem. I just want to thank you for being here and explaining from a professional perspective the benefits of something that in your normal work you didn't see and now you do, because I think there tends to be a disconnect.
There is.
I happen to have a daughter who she had a concussion last July. She's still recovering from. She's getting therapy. It's been very challenging for her. She's a 30-something, and it was an on-the-job injury. And I just want to thank you for being here to explain to us this is not uncommon. It happens a lot, and this is a path obviously that has value, and I'm glad you're here to explain it from your perspective.
Thank you.
Other questions? Great. Just so you're aware, we've actually had whole discussions in different committees about hippotherapy. You got big fans here. Yeah. Our committee's supposed to be looking at the land use implications of farm activities versus non-farm activities. So that's why we won't spend as much time on the value of hippotherapy, because we have done that before. This, we're supposed to be reading the bill and looking at it, but it's helpful to get the mix between on-horse and off-horse and how that interplays, because that's the bottom line. We don't want people charading as things on farmland that don't really need it, and they put in one crop or one animal, and then they run a big school.
Right.
So it's clear there needs to be a tie between the agricultural use, which you've worked to develop. And now we'll hear from Farm Bureau, who will tell us the same thing, because they defend the farmland. So thank you all for joining us
thank
and
you.
Coming
thank
so
you.
Far, too, in some cases. Senator Roblin, you want to come on up? I know you're here for the next bill, but we'll go. Or does Senator Courtney want to? You may be in line behind your Senate president, if that's okay. Is he here? Okay, let's hold the public hearing on hold here. Let me pause Senate Bill 1533A, public hearing, and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 1501. That's okay. We got time.
We got it.
Who cares? It could be a tax dollar, you know.
We're ready, Senator. We're in the public hearing, and we're ready. 1501, we heard the number. We don't know anything about this. Nothing at all, literally nothing. What can you tell us? See, sounds very controversial, though. That's all I can figure out so far. Unanimous out of the Senate, unanimous out of committee. Sounds terribly complex.
So, Chair Clem, Vice Chair McLean, Vice Chair Springer, my name is Peter Courtney. I'm a state senator, District 11, which is here in Salem, and parts of Salem goes up through Jervis and Woodburn. So, this bill, I think I helped introduce in the Senate side. I was asked by the State Fair Board to introduce it. State Fair is my district, but it's not my State Fair. The State Fair belongs to everybody. It really does. And it's been a struggle over the years as to how to help the State Fair be self-supporting or survive. State Fairs across the nation, you may or may not know, I'm sure you do, they've struggled. Many have gone under. And so we have struggled since the 80s when I was here, and we started to cut back our subsidy. I'm not going to give you a long history, and said you got to go on your own. You got to figure out a way to be self-sufficient, self-supporting. And we tried some different things, including making a part of parks, and that was okay, but not real good. So we passed a bill in 2013. I sponsored it, and Senate Bill 7, to create a State Fair Council as a public corporation. And I really struggle with that, but we did it. And they have done a remarkable job, that council. I mean, really, they have. They have worked very hard to make the State Fair not only successful during that State Fair event, but also throughout the year. They've really worked very hard. But they've identified some problems with its structure that they would like to fix with this bill. So this bill makes some small but I think important changes to the State Fair Council, which is the governing body, including decreasing membership from 11 to 15 to 9 to 13. So the way it exists now, they can have up to 15 members on it, which, not that I want to tell you about my philosophies, you can't do anything with 15 people in the park committee. Now, I don't mean to insult anybody, but I think it's a struggle with attendance. It's just a struggle. So they're not getting rid of the council. They're just saying, can we have it maybe 9 to 13? So that's what it does, that. Plus, most importantly, the bill adjusts the terms of office for all the current and future council members. Because right now, as I understand it, all their terms are up at the same time. That's not a real good idea. You need some overlap in terms. I mean, maybe, I don't know if you agree with that or not, but I agree with it. So you don't lose all the council at one time. You got some overlap. And, you know, I'm not trying to be a smart aleck, but they like to stagger and have some overlap with those terms. So this would ensure only a third of the council terms will be up at the same time. This means that there are always senior members, I'm always afraid to use the word senior anymore in the Oregon legislature, on the council to provide continuity to the council and preventing the entire council's terms from expiring at the same time. So this is a house cleaning bill, and so that's what it does. It's that simple. Is it important? You know? Yeah, it is, because they're working hard. I'm telling you, they're working hard. Arnie Roblin's in the audience. He's on it. He's really done a remarkable job. I love to go to the State Fair. I do. I don't do well there. I'm defeated. There's a goat milking contest there, and I'm just at my wit's end. I won the first one years ago because I bought a little pint of milk. You need to tell your sins. And I poured the pint of milk in my pail before no one could see me before we started.
That is completely illegal.
Sometimes you got to fess up. So,
okay, fine.
I did.
True confessions.
I did win, but I
you cheated. You cheated. You
well, yeah,
cheated
I
and won.
I did, and I didn't feel bad about it. I still don't, because if you could see the beating I take from a certain individual on this committee, it is. And I practiced. I meet my goat days ahead of time. I work with my goat, and I just can't. And I'm really getting tired of getting beat. I got to win this thing. And then Hansel's quit because he beat him. So I don't want to name the member of the committee who's just dominating this thing. Yeah. So I just have to say that. I love the event, though. And I love the kids. I love FFA. I love the That is how I've learned about rural Oregon, if you really want to choose, and the young people there who I worship, and I love to go out there and be with them. They run this event. It's a very good fair. You should be a part. All those county fairs plug into it. It's a great thing. So this council's really working hard. They're doing so great, but these changes are probably helping. So that's it. That's the bill.
Oh, this is going to get good. Questions for the Senate President while we have him in front of us.
My question is not for you, Senate President. Actually, it might be, but a collaboration between you and the chair. I'm just wondering how many years, Mr. Chair, you've been wanting to gavel down the Senate President committee.
I think it was at least 2011 when my Beaver Dam bill got redirected by the Senate President down into committee inexplicably. Since then, for sure. No, it was 2013. So at least 5 years. Other questions?
That was a good bill, too.
Okay, well, I have to say one.
Well, yeah, Vice Chair McClain.
I love the State Fair, and so this is my chance. I hardly ever get a chance to say, I love the State Fair. And I've been going since I was 8 years old, and it is a wonderful, it's morphed. There are different things about it, but we used to stay actually in dormitories down there when we had our animals. And we also went in and watched all the cooking demonstrations in the 4-H building. And the flowers, you can't forget the flowers. And then you get to go down and look at the combines and get to look at the tractors. And then you get to go down to the rides. So, and there's always some good things over in the Grange area. And
such as cheating goat milking.
I've never done that, but I heard I know who the winner is of that. And it sounds like he does it pretty well. So
I just want to comment. This is the second act of strange behavior I've heard about the State Fair. We had another gentleman come and testify that he entered a cantata berry pie into the Marion Berry pie competition to prove that Marion berries are really indistinguishable from cantata, and he won third place with Governor Kulongoski as the judge.
Oh, dear.
So there seems to be some crazy antics going on to win.
Various things.
Mr. Chair, I have never entered anything in the baking part.
Oh, that's good. That's positive.
I'm sure he'd like to tell you.
A demonstration, perhaps.
Chair Clem, Senator Cornyn, I just have to weigh in. We love the State Fair. It's iconic. In my county, the county fair is a big event. A lot of young people in 4-H want to come up if they can qualify for the State Fair. And I can't help calling out my daughter with a concussion. She won a ribbon for her knitting project at the State Fair when she was 13. And it was a huge event for her.
Yeah.
These are really important for our young people, whether they're riding horses or knitting or baking pies. So clearly understand from our rural folks how important this is. So I appreciate your attention to it.
Representative Proxman.
Thank you. I want to agree with Representative McEwen, especially in rural Oregon. These state fairs are iconic, and the kids get so excited. And the 4-H programs that we have, we just had the Dairy Princesses in the building yesterday, as for an example. It's really important that we keep that bridge, if you will, from the rural to urban, and with our farming community and ranching community, and the State Fair does that. I do have a story, Senate President Courtney.
A quick story. Senator Roblin's about to gavel you down.
The State Fair, when I was much younger, I actually met Johnny Cash when he was at the State Fair.
That's pretty cool.
That's music. There is music.
Could you sing a little?
No. I was actually at the hotel.
First, Mr. Chair.
Yeah. Okay. Further comments, questions? I will say I have appreciated the efforts of you, Senator Courtney, and the council. I was a little skeptical. You know, it's an important event for Salem. The real estate's an important part of our community, so we want it to be successful. I was nervous about not having parks have to pay our bills every year. Those of us who sat on that natural resources sub got evil eye from all the other legislators every time those budgets came up, and they said, why is the parks money going to the State Fair? And those of us from Salem would be, because it is. And that worked for a while, and luckily we had you there to protect it, but that was probably not a long-term solution. So trying to get some flexibility in their governance model to see if we can make it more self-sustaining versus, I think it was a $4 million a year subsidy or $4 million biennium subsidy. It was tough to defend it. We tried, for decades to keep it, but we had to do something. So if this works better, that's great. Any further questions for Senate President? Given your criticisms about the number of people not being able to do anything, I assume that's why our 60-member House always has to have our bills fixed by the 30-member Senate, because the less people, the better? That was a rhetorical question.
I could read Chair, I have a very strong feeling right now about something, and I'm not going to say anything because...
I'm his constituent. He's campaigning right now to me.
I love the House. I review the Senate. I served in the House 14 years. That's all I'm going to say, but my staff is watching the TV. I need to don't do it, Peter, because...
strength is a good thing.
I'm actually better now than I was a few months ago. So, I mean, it's a very... this is a very serious... It's very interesting you said that.
As you know, there's a soft spot in the Senate. She's homesick today. Our daughter's at school. I managed to get her out the door barely. Your Senate can't really function without my wife, so I'm not sure how you guys are even doing business today. But she was a huge state fair person. She placed in sewing, and she had animals. Her mom was on the 4-H board, so you will always have good luck in this urban dweller's environment due to the other half of the household, the Senate.
And, Mr. Chair, just a final remark, you really should come see the gold medal contest because Representative Barato is extraordinary. I do not know. I mean, it is it's incredible performance. It's I don't like to marvel at a competitor,
sure.
But
he is
extraordinary. So I say that.
The real Tom Notch goat medal.
I don't congratulate him right afterwards. I don't want to see him for a while. But I understand a great competitor when I'm around one. He's extraordinary what he does out there. So if you get a chance, you should come and watch that contest just to see him, if nothing else.
I think you've elicited something here. Representative Barato.
Yeah, just one little comment on the goat milking. I was over in Madras, and someone came up to me and asked if are you Greg Barato? I said, I am. He said, well, those are my goats that you milk at the State Fair. And he said, Senator Courtney came over and practiced several times to try and, to advance his skills. And so I just want to say it is true that he does work hard at it. And I have won that for 3 years, but I think that's it. I'm going to bow out and let others
cheat. I mean,
yeah.
Win. Senator, always nice to have you here in the House Ag Committee.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator.
If you decide to ever start a Senate Ag Committee, you might have a chair sitting in the back there who'd be interested. Okay, let me go back to our equine therapy bill here. So let me temporarily hold Senate Bill 1501, close the public hearing, and reopen Senate Bill 1533A. Ask Jonathan to come up, and then we'll get to Senator Roblin right after that.
Chair Clem, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jonathan Sandow. I'm with the Oregon Farm Bureau Federation. Thank you for making time to come back and hear our testimony. The Oregon Farm Bureau is happy to work with the proponents of this bill to clarify that equine therapy is an allowed unconditional use on EFU land and help develop the A engrossed version of this bill. We understand the valuable role that horses play in enhancing lives of those around them, and we are happy to support these facilities. Thank you for the opportunity to testify, and we appreciate your support.
Questions for Jonathan? Representative Escobar.
Question, I guess it's a question
or comment.
Throughout,
yes.
Period, is obviously the intent wasn't where we ended up with someone's interpretation. Why doesn't that individual call up and ask for what the intent of the bill was?
I think it was the Deschutes County Planner. We talked about having a talk with that person. Actually, some of the folks and I talked pre-session. And they're just, we've been through this before in Deschutes County, where they get nervous about being held out of compliance. And so on weddings and other things, we've had to pass bills just to make sure they do it right. And sometimes we just lean on county commissioners. In fact, I think Jackson County had a planner who wasn't going to allow something, and we ended up convincing them it was better for them to not have us pass a bill, and they backed off. But it just happens sometimes. The county planners get nervous.
DLCDC on EFU land hooking up to a public sewer.
I'm thinking of a different one.
Okay.
I can't remember what it was. Maybe with the biosolids. Anyway, sometimes county planners get nervous. It makes then residents and business owners nervous. So this time, before they actually made a ruling, it was like, hey, why don't you just be very clear that we can have classes that don't involve the horses as long as they're incidental and subordinate to the horse activity. But sometimes a phone call solves it. A lot of times a phone call solves it. It's a very good point, well taken. Vice Chair McLean.
Now, I just wanted to say I think it's good for us to clear up any law that seems to have some interpretation that's different. different than what the intent is. So I support this, and I thank the Farm Bureau for working with this and supporting it. It seems extremely integrated and important. It could be a tack room for the therapy room. So to me, it doesn't seem like it's a stretch. One room, a couple of rooms that are going to be allowing the integration of therapy, what a good use of the facility.
Further comments on this, or questions for Jonathan? Okay, with that, let me close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1533A, and let's open a work session on Senate Bill 1533A. Take a motion.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 1533A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chairman Klein moves Senate Bill 1533A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? Bill goes to the floor. We'll ask Representative Stark to carry it. Thank you for coming in. Okay, back to Senator Roblin, who's waited patiently. Plus, I get to wait Mr. Chandler's retirement, just delay it another little while here until he gets to talk about the state fair. So let me open a public hearing on Senate Bill 1550A. And you and your partner in crime here are going to illuminate.
Many
food fish.
Before I get started, for the record, Arnie Roblin, State Senator, District 5. I do want to acknowledge that being on the Fair Board Commission is one of the greatest honors I've had. I truly love it. We have an amazing president this year, one of the best I've ever worked with. He's in the audience. You'll get to talk to him later. And a CEO who has been amazing at getting us on track and meeting the requirements that the state set up and that. And Barreto, this last time, I think they gave him a pygmy goat, and he still outperformed everybody else. And they probably milked it before they gave it to him. So I'm just telling you, even Hansel is in awe, so who won once before, before Barreto showed up. So it's been, and we take full credit in Coos Bay for that, because he was one of the first athletes in Southwestern Oregon Community College, and our new honoree as an amazing wrestler at Southwestern in the first year the
really?
Wrestling program became second in the nation in his weight class. And so we always think that he probably helped us, that grip that he had when he was a wrestler. God had him where he is today. As
it's
a
yeah.
So,
and no idea.
Honored alum of Southwestern.
Oh,
so I like
right.
to make connections all the way back to Coos Bay as many time I can. So
yeah. That, all roads lead
all
to Coos.
All
roads lead to Coos.
So, but now we'll get down to serious business with respect to 1550. When we were looking in the Senate, I don't know that you realize this, but in the Senate we get one bill instead of two, because our bills are really important. And so the one I chose after working with some people at the Newport and the Fish and Wildlife was to deal with an issue that we've had come up on the coast. And it really was supposed, when I first started, it was a very narrow bill. It had to do with domoic acid that exists out in our ocean. They eat this algae, they get this in their gut, and if you eat it, it can cause you to be very sick and cause some mental stuff too, because it's a toxin that is not something that we should ingest. And so we've had a number of cases. It's lasted later. We've had our season start much later because of it, and we just currently, and we'll let him talk about it, had another closure on the South Coast. It is an ongoing issue that we've got to deal with, and we on the coast are very, very interested in making sure that people have confidence in the seafood they eat. I mean, that is really a big issue for us. And so figuring out how to deal with that became a really important thing. And so that, because of that, we expanded this to take all food fish. And when you say food fish, you don't think of crab and oysters, but they are all in that same category. And what we're trying to do is make sure, as other industries have done, so that when it's harvested, we know the boat that it came in on, where they came from, and then it goes to the processing plant, and we keep track of those crab that came from that boat in that time, and then it goes to the supermarket, and we keep track of that. So if something happens down the train, we can go right back to the boat and the place it was found, and we can make a decision about whether or not this is a widespread or just a narrow issue with regard to that. What I didn't realize when we were having it in the Senate was that because we've expanded so much, the kids raising tilapia over in Ontario are also covered in this bill. And and it's the right thing to do because we don't want fish or any of these others to get into the chain and have a problem with them and not be able to figure out where it came from. So that's what this bill does. I think we've done some little making sure that it does that right. One of the issues that popped up when I realized it was as big as it was that it affects Native American fishing, and so the Umatillas came in and said, look, I don't want you thinking you should regulate us because of XYZ. We got that out, so in the amended bill you have, we make sure we don't interfere with Native American fishing rights that go back before we were a state. So I think have taken care of those kinds of issues that needed to be, and I think the bill is in good shape right now, and I encourage you to help us help the Oregonians and the rest of people around the world understand that our fresh fish and fish food is the best in the world, which we've always known it was, and now we can actually make them feel more comfortable and safe. So thank you.
Thank you, Senator. David Brock Smith, State Representative, House District 1, from the Senator's District, Representative McEwen's District down south. I want to thank the Senator for putting this bill together, introducing this bill, and allowing me to partner with him on this bill, along with Representative McEwen and Senator Cruz. It's a critically important piece of legislation, especially right now. We don't have control over the domoic acid issues in the ocean. We know that in recent years there seems to be a trend that there's an increased level of the domoic acid issues that are based on algae that causes crabs to be basically unedible. And just to add to the latter conversation of the Senator Roblin, how it will be beneficial to a broad spectrum of fish food. It also can deal with the shellfish and the oysters and so forth, that if there's, you know, some sort of biotoxin or what have you. Normally crab season starts on the coast, in the south coast, in December. This year it didn't start until, I believe, it was February 4th. And then they only had 9 days of fishing before a domoic acid closed what the sections. They break out the coast into sections K and L. So everything from Cape Blanco south is closed because they found a crab in Brookings, which is, you know, 56 miles away. And so, this bill couldn't be better timed. To allow that tracking, because every crab fisherman has the GPS location devices on their boat, so they know where their crab pots are. So they can go out there, and that's really the initial recording, so that when it does go through the system, as the senator explained, they know where that crab came from, so that they can backtrack, and then when they get a hot crab here, they know where that crab came from, but they don't have a hot crab here, and then they can test again, so they can limit those and localize those closures to allow our fishermen to fish. It's feast or famine out there, especially in the South Coast, especially in our district, that still 6% below mean zero pre-recession unemployment, and they work really hard. It's a dangerous field. We've already lost, we've lost many fishermen over the years, especially the recent years. And so I can't thank the senator enough. I appreciate the committee, and I respectfully request your aye vote.
Senator Roblin?
One last comment, because people will see me mispronounce domoic acid from time to time. I call it demonic acid, in large part because there is a circulating story that the movie Birds came from some domoic acid infected crabs on the beach in California, and one of the people were watching as these birds ate that, and this went crazy all over the place, and they thought, wow, this would be a great book. And as you know, interesting movie. So domoic acid has been around with us forever. It's just how we monitor it and what we're going to do with it. So thank you very much.
Representative McEwen.
Thank you, Chair Clem. I want to also, Senator, thank you for bringing this very important bill. It kind of goes hand in hand with a pilot study we're doing that has to do with shellfish harvest and closures when they find contaminants in our bays. It's a blanket closure for a lengthy set period of time. It really doesn't need to be. So we're doing testing to see if we can open the bays quicker when the toxins have actually diminished, instead of just saying you're closed for 2 full weeks. Maybe they only need to be closed for 3 days. This kind of falls in line with what we're trying to do with shellfish as well. And Senator or Representative, could one of you explain that this toxin is only in the crab butter? It's not actually in the meat. And so there's an important differentiation as to how we work with that as well.
Yeah, thank you for that, because I leave that out of mind, because the favorite word of my person next to me is
evisceration.
So you can get an evisceration order, which means that you tear the back off the crab and you before you boil it. When you do that, there isn't any domoic acid in the tissue. The domoic acid is only in that portion of the crab that is the internal of the gut and so on. So it is one of the ways you can make sure the stuff is edible without having to throw all your crab back, and it is an interesting part of this. And so we're hoping that they'll do evisceration orders as opposed to closing down the season if it doesn't get to a certain level. Once it gets to a really high level, they don't allow that either. But
trying to do this with a scalpel instead of with a big hammer.
Yeah, and just to add, thank you for the Chair Clam, Representative McEwen, just to add to that comment on evisceration orders. You know, with our commodity and our processors, it's a little more complex for them to eviscerate but for the sport fishery and the sporty folks, I mean, it isn't. So I eviscerate my crab before I cook it anyway. Because, you know, as the senator said, it's only in the guts, if you will, that the domoic acid is there. And so it doesn't get into the flesh until it's boiled with it. We have opportunities for increased evisceration.
Okay, and then we're going to hear from ODF and WFDU on this, too. Any further questions for our colleagues? Okay, thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much, and I hope that you treat the president of the Fair Board really kindly. Thank you.
Okay, Shannon, Chris. Evisceration.
Chair Clam, members of the committee, for the record, Shannon Hearn, Deputy Director at the Department of Fish and Wildlife. Karin Bravery is our Marine Program Manager. She is unable to get here due to the weather, so I brought Chris with me today. After hearing Representative Smith and Senator Roblin, I don't know that you need a lot from us. Chris will give you the real high level, and then we're happy to answer any questions if needed. Good, Chris.
Okay. Thank you. Chair Clem and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Chris Kern. I'm the Deputy Fish Division Administrator. I do oversee the Marine Program as well as the Columbia Program. And so I believe you have our written testimony. I can probably brief that up if you'd prefer.
Yes.
I appreciate the comments several folks made about a surgical approach. I think that's really what this bill allows us to do, gives us another tool that we didn't have before. In a way that we could also ensure public safety. And so evisceration orders are a way that the fishery can continue for in some areas while still maintaining public safety. There are at very high levels of domoic acid. The toxins can reach the meat, but they do accumulate in the viscera much faster and at much higher concentrations. So most times we can eviscerate if we have a way to track the seafood. And so what this does is it clarifies the commission's authority, the Fish and Wildlife Commission's authority, to track the sale of products across the chain. We already track the purchases relatively well, but this gives ODA the ability to go in at either end of the market chain and follow it through and find the product. It also gives, along that, it clarifies that they have some, the commission can issue them authority, ODA authority, to do that, which they don't have currently for facilities that aren't already ODA licensed. So that's really the quick and short of it. Yeah. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Questions for Chris or Shannon? Okay. You're off the hook. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Let's close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1550A, open a work session on Senate Bill 1550A. And
Vice Chair, would you like to?
Chair Clem, I move Senate Bill 1550A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Springer moves Senate Bill 1550A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, sent to the floor, Rep. Brock Smith, carry. Reopen the public hearing at Senate Bill 1501. Call John Chandler and Mike Palusak up, and one of you will tell us who's the president, I assume. Ooh, Mr. President. Dun, dun.
Oh, dun, dun, dun. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. John Chandler, Aurora, Oregon, here in my capacity as the chair of the state Oregon State Fair Council.
I'd like to call it president, but if you want to call it chair, that's fine.
Well, I appreciate all the kind words that Senator Roblin had to say, and I'm really appreciative of the fact he did not bring up the word evisceration and connection with the, the chair of the state fair council. You heard from Senator Courtney what this bill does. It basically is very simple. It allows us to lower the numbers of the fair council, but most importantly, does stagger the terms. When this bill was passed initially, or the state fair council spun off as a semi-private entity in 2013, there were a few things that didn't get caught in the first draft. This is one of them, obviously a very controversial issue. But we do want to report, though, and Mr. Polacek is here, who's our executive director of the State Fair and Expo Center. He can speak if you have any questions. But I do want to report to you, as legislators, who many of whom participated in that discussion back in 13, the experiment is working very well. The state fair is profitable, has been profitable every year since we started. We've invested over $1 million of state fair revenue and expo center revenue back into the state's fairgrounds. We do not own the property. The council is not, is our stewards of the state's asset there. We've invested over $1 million fixing up the physical plant, restoring some of the buildings. The expo center, which has always been the challenge for the, that facility, is now active more often than it's not. State fair always made money. We were the other 50 weeks of the year were always the challenge. Under Mr. Polacek's leadership, we've been able to have a lot more events there, very profitable events, and we're excited about the future. You'll see at the state fair those, and thank you for all the kind words. And Representative McLean, if you've been coming since you were 8, I hope you enjoy the next 20 years as well at the State Fair. It's a good show.
You're good, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd be glad to take any questions.
Mike, do you want to chime in?
How do I follow?
It's impossible. It's literally impossible.
So I'm happy to answer any questions.
Questions for these nice gentlemen.
You are with State Fair royalty in the sense of Representative Barreto's.
That's true.
Exquisite, Olympic quality.
Pygmy goat milking, non-cheating champion.
We are in awe.
There needs to be an event at the Olympics. You should probably make that a resolution.
Winter or summer?
Either one, both, actually. Okay. Why not?
Rep. Rex Smith.
Well, 2 points. Thank you for being here. I appreciate what the State Fair are doing. I had no idea we had royalty and president in the with Mr. Chandler.
I didn't either till today.
Standards are very low.
I am quite disappointed, though, from our chair this morning that there wasn't a more Marilyn Monroe-esque
kind of serenade.
Mr. President.
Oh, boy.
Wow. I got to go.
I got to find my blonde wig, and then I could do
my
it.
My goodness, Mr. Chair, look at the time.
Yeah, boy.
We'll
close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1501. Open a work session on Senate Bill 1501.
Chair Clem, I move Senate Bill 1501 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair McLean moves. I got to just pick one and do this, I think. Moves Senate Bill 1501 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. No amendments, right? 1501. Any discussion? Any objection? Seeing none, we will approve the Senate Bill 1501. I will carry it and I'll check with Rep. Alonzo Leon. That's in her district, but otherwise I'll carry it. We always like to represent our senators, and I would love to talk about his cheating goat milking ways on the floor while. So he said he wrote me. He's very nervous coming in front of this committee. He heard this is like where all bills come to die. We're brutal characters, and he didn't really say that. He said he had a nice time. With that, colleagues, we are done for the short session. I know of no more informational meetings. I know of no more bills coming our way. It was a real pleasure getting to see you all again. I will not make you come here any longer unless something comes up that's urgent. Vice Chair McLean.
So some of the work sessions that we were talking about working on in the interim.
Oh, work groups, yeah.
Those
could start during this time slot if you want to. Like you and Brock Smith have got wetlands. Removal fill. So.
And then also if there's any topics for legislative updates that we've heard from folks they would like,
just feed them to us. The folks who've asked for informational hearings, we gave them. And then I don't know of any outstanding, right now, but yes.
We might have an issue that deems maybe a informational hearing on it, but maybe I'll talk to you.
Okay, yeah, just feed things to Laura if you know of something. Otherwise, you can have your time back to start work group work. Yeah. Okay, everybody, thanks for a good short session.
Good.
I think we only had one split vote, and we'll see what happens in Ways and Means to that one. Okay, thank you, everybody.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
What's up?